Well, if you've been thinking about starting a straw bale garden this year, you are in luck today because we have a guy who knows all about straw bale gardening with us. Joel Karsten, our guest, who has written 3 best-selling books on the subject and is a sought-after speaker. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have him along for this edition of Garden Talk. And I hope you'll join in with your own experiences about straw bale gardening if you've started, or if you have questions about how to get started, or problems that have developed with your straw bale garden, perhaps, or maybe achievements. Love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Or post a question and or a photo on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show, and I always love to see. We've had some wonderful photos of straw bale gardens in the past, and I'm always looking for more. So go to the Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can join right in. And Joel Karsten, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on, Larry. I really appreciate it. It's good to be with you.
Isn't it a great time of the year, you know?
It certainly is, yeah. I can feel the sprouts starting to come out of the trees, and you can feel the warm air. So it's a good time of year.
Yeah, good time to get going in straw bale gardening.
That's for sure. There's a lot of that happening all over the country. Down south already, there's people with stuff already knee-high coming out of their straw bales, so we're a little behind up this far north, but, you know, it takes time. So
you know that, and straw bale gardening, as you're just pointing out there, it's really kind of caught on around the country and even to some extent around the world.
Well, I tell you what, Larry, on a per capita basis, I think it's even more popular in Europe than it is here in the United States, and you can imagine why, because they have such limited space over there. A lot of them garden on their rooftops, and there's no more perfect way to garden on a rooftop than in a straw bale. So we have a lot of people in the Netherlands and France and Germany and Italy and Spain that all love straw bale gardening, and luckily we have books translated into all their languages. So
now that is really cool. You know, there may be gardeners listening who say, what in the heck is straw bale gardening? And so why don't you just kind of describe it, what it really is?
Well, there's a bit of a misnomer, because sometimes people think when they see a straw bale garden that you're just plain growing vegetables in straw, and that's just not the case, Larry. Mm-hmm. What really happens is the inside of that bale, over a very short period of time, is going to go through a process we call conditioning. And that process essentially grows bacteria inside the bales, along with fungus. You'll get some mushrooms that will grow, and worms, and insects, and mold that will grow inside the bale, and all of those things work together to begin the decomposition process. And they really transform that oat stalk or wheat stalk, or even if you're using a hay bale, it'll do the stalks of hay inside there. It transforms those back into molecules instead of the cells that they come from, and it turns it really into soil. So the inside of your bale becomes brand new soil, virgin soil. Now you can imagine, as a gardener, if you get to use virgin soil, there's no disease problems in it. There's no insect problems in it. And for goodness sake, there's no weed seeds. So it really eliminates a lot of the things that we fight in a traditional soil garden, because we have this brand new soil that's being created inside the bales.
Well, I've got my bales, or at least I have 4 bales. I just snapped a picture of them the other day that they're out by the south side of the house, where it gets really good sunlight, and I'll be conditioning those bales and getting going.
Yeah, it doesn't take very long. It takes, you know, if you're doing it using lawn fertilizer, you can do it in about 12 days. If you're using organic techniques, so you're using like blood meal or feather meal or Milorganite, it takes just a little bit longer from my experience. So I tell people in the book to give yourself 18 days. So you could get started at any point here. You know, We're still about 20 days from our average last frost where I am. So that's about the right timing to get started. I always tell people, you know, if you move back in your calendar about 20 days before your average last frost, not your record last frost, but your average, that's a good time to start. That means that the days will be somewhat warm outside. And you know, you need a little bit of air temperature warmth in order to help these bacteria reproduce inside the bales.
Yeah, and we have frost warnings tonight, so.
Yeah, so it's too early to plant for sure. You know,
yeah.
We can still plant a straw bale garden just a little bit earlier than you can in the soil, because those bales are nice and warm when it comes planting day.
Yeah.
And when they're, you know, 80, 90 degrees inside that bale and your soil is only 50 degrees, well, that tomato loves it. When you put it in that bale, it starts growing very quickly. Then if you get cold nighttime temperatures, we have this little thing we talk about in the book called the straw bale greenhouse, which is really just a little plastic cover that you make, a little tent that you pull over the top of your plants, over the top of the bale, and that protects your plants from any cold nighttime temperatures. And you get this radiant energy coming out of the bales, which keeps that little greenhouse above the bales nice and warm inside.
Yeah, that's very cool. Gary in Washburn has something for us. Let's go there. Gary, thanks for calling.
Hi, Gary.
Hi. I'm getting ready to get my bales conditioned up here in northern Wisconsin. And I've got bales, and some that were aged as of last fall, some that are new, some a couple of months ago. And one of the things I've been wondering, because I've seen mushrooms growing in my bales in the past, if I couldn't inoculate them with spawn from oyster mushrooms, which you can buy commercially, and on the sides, maybe on the shady side, grow some oyster mushrooms along with the vegetables.
I certainly have heard of people doing that. Now, I have to confess, I'm not a mushroom expert. Mm-hmm. And what I always tell people in my seminars is don't eat the mushrooms that sprout out of the bales, because, you know, or at least try them on somebody you don't like before you eat them.
Yeah.
You never know. So you want to be careful with mushrooms. You know, if you know what you're doing and you know you've bought what the spores are, you know, that you're inoculating, what
correct.
Those are supposed to look like, and you feel 100% comfortable harvesting those mushrooms and eating them, then go for it. Most of the time, the mushrooms that just volunteer out of the bales are going to be decomposer mushrooms. Ink toppers are very common. There's another one called scrambled egg mushroom, or another name for it is dog vomit mushroom, because
mm-hmm.
it looks
yep.
just like what it sounds like. And they're harmless. You know, they won't hurt you. They don't hurt your plants, but they certainly are not going to be good to eat. So, yeah, if you want to do some, you know, oyster mushrooms or whatever, I know you're never going to get shiitakes or morels or anything like that to grow out of them. If you figure that out, you call me, because we got a future together. Mm-hmm. If you can figure that out, Gary. But the button tops, you might get those button mushrooms. Those oyster mushrooms might do well. Do some experimenting and see what you come up with. I'd love to hear your results. So.
Yeah.
I will do that.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Paul next in Middleton. Hi, Paul.
Hello, and thanks for having me.
Sure.
Joel, we caught your presentation at the garden show in Madison here a few months ago, or a couple months ago.
All right.
And so we set up our bales, and we're just beginning to condition them, and you say that we should be using warm water to soak the bales, but, you know, we went out and bought 7 buckets, and I'm thinking maybe we need a cow trough in order to have enough water to do it.
Well, sometimes a rain barrel works well, too. You know, sometimes people use a little too much water. So let's calculate how much water you're using. Once those bales are good and saturated, so you're going to use your hose for that, you know, the first day or maybe 2 days to really get them nice and soaked. And that's going to be cold water, but that isn't the end of the world. Now you're going to fill those buckets up with water, and you're only going to use about 1 gallon per bale during the rest of the conditioning period, because remember, we're not really feeding roots. There's no roots growing in there yet. All we need to do is keep that bale just moist enough that the bacteria continue their reproduction process. And very often people say, well, I put fertilizer on top of the bales, and now I got to get all that fertilizer washed down into the bale. And that's not really the case. If a little bit sits on top of the bale, it doesn't hurt anything. Those microbes will actually come right to the surface, and they'll grab that nitrogen right off the top of the bale, and they'll pull what they need down into the bale. So don't worry so much about washing all the fertilizer in, and make sure you don't overwater. You know, I talked to a guy on the phone one day, and he said, you know, I've been watering my bales for 3 hours every day, and I can't get the fertilizer worked in, and they're not getting warm inside. And I said, well, why don't you unhook that hose and put it over your head, and call me back in a half an hour. I want to see how you feel in a half an hour with that cold water on your head. I said, you're freezing those bacteria inside there. You're adding way too much water. So just a little bit of what I call warmed water, which is just cold water today in a bucket. Tomorrow that's warmed water. So it's warmed up to air temperature. Use a little bit less, and less is more in this case when it talks about growing bacteria.
Okay, good. That helps a lot, because I'm sure I was overwatering, or I've been overwatering, now that you mentioned that. So, okay, I'll just, you know, lighten up a little.
Yeah. Yep. You know, when I water, and I don't know if this is the right amount, but when I've got my sprayer or my hose out, I'll do about 3 minutes a bale.
Yeah, you're probably giving plenty of water. You know, 3 minutes, if that's 2 gallons
time
a
it.
Minute, you're probably using 5 gallons of water. That's probably a little too much.
Yeah, maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Even cut back a little bit more, and then use a sprayer action that helps to kind of break up that fertilizer a little bit. But, you know what, Larry, in the long run, it's all going to work. It just might take your bales an extra day or two before they colonize completely with bacteria. But it also, you know, if you get a really nice warm day, that bacteria divides really quickly. And it colonizes very rapidly inside the bale. I was doing the math the other day, and there's a thing about bacteria is they'll reproduce themselves about every 15 minutes, given the right conditions.
Wow.
The right conditions means they need water, they need fertilizer, and they need warm temperatures. So a nice warm air temperature. So if you start out with one, and it's going to reproduce itself every 15 minutes, just do the math with me here. We got a 24-hour day. That's 96 replication periods. So if we start with one, now we got two, now we got four. Do that math. Two times two times two, do it 96 times, and what number are you coming
with? Big number.
It's a 7 with 28 zeros behind it, Larry. That's a really big number. It's trillions of bacteria that develop inside that bale very quickly, even within 24 hours. And each of those little bacteria, when they're dividing, they replicate by division. That's how bacteria reproduce. So they pinch in the middle, and then they vibrate back and forth. And when they vibrate, they create friction. Just like when you rub your hands together, what happens? Your hands get warm, right? What happens when a Boy Scout rubs two sticks together?
Yeah.
It starts a fire, right?
Yeah.
So these bacteria are vibrating inside there while they're splitting apart. And it's that vibration that causes the bales to heat up. This is the same thing that causes your compost pile to heat up. It's the same thing that, you know, when you reach in your bagger, you forgot to dump your grass clippings out last week, and you reach in your bagger this week to empty those grass clippings out, and those grass clippings are hot.
Yep.
That's bacteria reproducing and dividing inside there, vibrating back and forth as they divide. That's what creates that friction energy that causes the bales to heat up. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, it really is.
And it works every year. It works the same way.
Rob in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Great. Hey, I have some very large baled leaves, or leaf bales, I should say. They're about 6 feet long by approximately 3 feet high and wide. And I'm wondering if I can apply the same principles to the leaf bales as I would to straw bales.
Yes, you can.
I know it throws off some of the calculations for, mm-hmm. you know, compared to the straw bales, but I'm sure I can maybe figure that out.
Well, what kind of leaves are they? That's an important thing because, you know, some things have much higher carbon content than other leaves. So that would be something you could probably find if you Googled it, you know, find out what kind of carbon content they have. You know, there's a big difference between oat straw, wheat straw, barley straw, and rice straw and how much carbon content they have. But if you follow the basic protocol that I've given you in the book, you're going to have success no matter what kind of straw you use. You're probably going to have success no matter what kind of leaves you have as well. But, yeah, that might work really well. I'd figure out some way to put some kind of netting, if there isn't already, around that bale, because leaves tend not to have those long strands like straw does, and that bale's probably going to crumble apart quite a bit easier than a bale.
Yeah, it's baled, you know, it's got a really significant three twines around it, and the twine's holding up. I've had them sitting out all winter, of course. And so they're pretty tight yet. They do fall apart. I mean, these things, I have to move them around with a skid loader because they weigh about 1,200 pounds apiece. And that's when they're first baled.
Sure.
You know, now they're probably 2,000 pounds. They're soaking wet sitting over the winter. But, they're starting to break down, but they're still holding up pretty good. And I'm really curious to see how
they work.
Gonna work this year.
You know, one thing you might consider doing is wrap the whole bale with chicken wire, and then get a 2x4 and staple both ends of the chicken wire once you overlap it on that 2x4, and then just twist the 2x4, and it'll wrap the ends of that chicken wire, and it'll squeeze that bale together nice and tight. And, you know, that might help to keep that bale intact so the sides of it don't start to fall apart and disintegrate. We have a section in my newest book, The Straw Bale Garden's Complete, where we talk about building your own bales or making your own bales. And it's one of the things we talk about in there is using leaves and grass clippings and leftover straw from last year's garden. You compress it into a big bucket, essentially. You dump the bucket out once it's nice and compressed, and then you wrap around it with chicken wire and a little stick like that, and then you twist it to hold it together. So that same concept might work for your great big bale of leaves as well.
Give it a shot, Rob. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking straw bale gardening today with Joel Karsten, who has written three books on it. The latest, Straw Bale Gardens Complete. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we'll find out what's going on at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. And, of course, we'll be answering your gardening questions then. Right now, visiting with Joel Karsten, author of Straw Bale Gardens Complete, and having a lot of fun visiting with him. Join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page a question and or photo. If you got a straw bale garden photo, we'd love to see that as well. The Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And speaking of Facebook, Shelley posted on Facebook that this is her third year of straw bale gardening. She's had great success with some things, but not everything. Voles are a problem for her, and she wants to know how can she go all organic. This year she'll be planting kale on top of two bales so her dogs won't eat the kale. She's using a couple bales high.
You got some healthy dogs. They like the kale.
Yeah.
You know what I would recommend first for the moles or voles is to buy a roll of, it's called hardware cloth wire at the hardware store.
It's like screen.
Yeah, it's like screen, but it's half-inch mesh, something like that, or quarter-inch mesh or
quarter
whatever.
Quarter-inch.
It's called hardware cloth, but it's not cloth at all. It's actually wire. And just unroll that, and then put your bales right on top of that. And you can kind of bend the edges up around your bales if you want to. And then, because the moles and voles, they always try to come in from the bottom of the bale. And then they'll come in the bottom, and they'll try to eat your potatoes and things that are inside that bale. So you can eliminate that problem. Now, if you don't already have moles and voles, they're not going to be attracted to your yard because you've got a straw bale garden. But if you already have them in your grass, which lots of people do, then, you know, if your garden's nearby, which it usually is, they're going to smell those potatoes over there, and they're going to try to get into those bales from the bottom. But that works really well. As far as other, you know, rodents from around the area, I always tell people two things. Keep the bales nice and moist, which is important for good plant growth as well. And if you keep the bales moist, you're not going to have rodents like mice that like to make a nest inside that bale. They'd love to nest in a dry bale, Larry, but not a wet one. They don't like water on their head every morning, so you're not going to have a problem if you keep the bales nice and moist. The other thing you want to do if you have a vegetable garden is don't put up a bird feeder near your vegetable garden, because that spilled grain from a bird feeder is a big invitation for rodents, and you'll tend to get lots of mice in a vegetable garden if there's a bird feeder anywhere nearby. If there's not, you'll find that it usually is not any more of a problem than any traditional garden has with mice.
Gary in Rhinelander has a question for us. So let's
go. Hi, Gary.
Yeah. Hi there. Thanks a lot for calling.
Hi there. Thank you. Hey, I've been doing straw bales for about 5 years, and I've sold about 60-year books, so I really do enjoy it.
Don't I?
Yes. I do have a question about reusing last year's straw bales, you know, rebuilding them and such. And once I get them together and tighten them up, do I still need to do any fertilizing on them to recondition or to at least get a nice hot temperature or not? Or is it just watering? Sure. And second question is about hazelnut leaves. There's hazelnut leaves that fly around in my garden on top of the straw bales. Are those bad for it or not?
Okay. Well, let's take the first question first. As far as reconditioning a bale will only decompose one time. Organic material will only decompose one time. So the inside of that bale, the first year when you put fertilizer and water on, it's going to get really hot inside, and then it cools off, and then you're going to plant. You can add more fertilizer if you over, especially if you water too much. You'll tend to leach a lot of the nitrogen out of the bale, so then you got to add more fertilizer. But at the end of the year, if that bale's still in good condition, you sort of reconnoiter it and squeeze it together a little bit. The second year, I always recommend planting root crops in there, because root crops like potatoes and carrots, they don't need any of that extra heat like your tomatoes and your peppers and your cucumbers. Like, they love that heat early in the spring. So use a second-year bale for root crops, and you really don't need to do any conditioning to it at all, and it's not going to get hot ever again. The inside of it has been hot once. It only happens one time, but that's okay, because the root crops don't need that the second year. The other thing is, you might need to add a little fertility during that second season in that bale, because, you know, if you've watered that bale all through the year and it's been rained on a number of times, a lot of your soluble nutrients, particularly nitrogen and calcium, magnesium, can have been leached out of that bale because of that water running through. So just adding a sort of an all-around fertilizer will certainly help, you know, those plants produce. Your plants will talk to you, though. If you watch the leaves, I always tell people, just watch the leaves really closely, and you'll see a color change if they need particular nutrients. You know, you'll see a light green color if they need nitrogen, and a purplish color if they need phosphorus. And, you know, they'll give you signals of what they need. So just watch them closely. And then the second question about the hazelnut leaves, I can't see that would be a problem at all. I mean, you might get a small, thin little layer of them on there, but, you know, I can't see that those would break down enough to have any effect at all on the plants that you've got in your garden. But so I wouldn't worry about those at all. Yep. Just get out from under the shade of any hazelnut. You don't want the shade, but other than that, you'll be fine.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Judy in Stevens Point up next. Hi, Judy.
Hey, good morning, Larry.
Morning.
I'm laughing because I've already made so many mistakes with my straw bales that I'm worried about what I'm going to end up with.
It always works out.
Well, the first thing I did, because I was tickled with the idea, because I had raspberries invade my raised bed. So the first mistake I made was put down plastic. And so I do have plastic under my straw bales. Now, I've stabbed holes all along the edges hoping, but I can't get under those bales anymore. And so anyway, that's my first problem. The other thing I did that I don't know how well it was recommended is I put my bales out in the fall. So they've been sitting out all winter.
Okay.
So I don't know. Do you have any suggestions for me?
You'll be fine. It'll work out fine. The only reason I don't recommend that you put plastic underneath the bales is mainly because it holds moisture. And, you know, humidity is not the friend of a vegetable garden. We like to keep our leaves of the foliage of our vegetable plants as dry as possible. Keep the roots wet, but keep the leaves dry. And if you have plastic all around your garden, now any rainfall or water that runs out the bottom of the bale is going to sit on top of that plastic. Now it's going to evaporate in the sun, and that's going to create a more humid environment, and it's going to tend to spread disease. So that's one of the main reasons. The other reason you'll see is it tends to get a little stinky, because you'll get buildup on top of it of, you know, algae and stuff like that, and it can get a little slippery as well. So just be cautious, that's all. But it should be fine. I mean, as long as you punched a few holes in it so the water can drain out, you should be fine. Also, wear your mosquito repellent, because if there's any puddles on top of that plastic, you're going to get some mosquito breeding happening out there in that garden as well. But other than that, it should end up fine without any trouble. Now, as far as putting your bales out in the fall, that's actually something I suggest to folks. You know, if you really get started as a straw bale gardener, you're going to discover one thing. Bales are a lot less expensive in the fall than they are in the spring. And it makes perfect sense, because that farmer harvested all that crop during the fall, and he'd like to get rid of it. He doesn't want to have to put it in his barn and then take it out again next spring and, you know, have to sell it to somebody. So usually they're a little less expensive in the fall. And if you buy them, put them right out in your garden where you're going to use them. Let them get rained on and snowed on. That won't hurt a thing. They don't really begin that rapid decomposition until you add the nitrogen. When you add that nitrogen, then those bacteria really flourish quickly. You will get a few mushrooms and things that will start to grow, but you still need to condition those bales. Go through the same process to get that spike of heat inside the bale. And that heat's important. It sterilizes, you know, any potential weed seeds and anything else that's in there, any bad diseases or anything, or fungal diseases that might be on that bale. that heat, blast of heat, will do that, and that bacteria is what creates that. And, of course, the fertilizer is what causes the bacteria to heat up. So you'll be just fine. It's actually, you're probably going to have a better garden because you put your bales out last fall than you would have had you just went to the market today and bought your bales. You'll see they'll
be. Now I'm all excited again.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. It's pretty hard to screw up a straw bale garden. It truly is.
That's a good thing.
All right, Judy. Thank you so much for calling. I do really, in your book, Joel, one of the great things about the book is, in addition to the written instructions, are all the wonderful photos, actual photographs, and then some great line drawings as well about pretty much everything you need to do to set your garden up.
Yeah, we really tried to make the book for a person who has never gardened before. You know, they're absolute rookie and never grown anything. They, you know, we don't get into a lot of the real deep plant pathology and science and stuff. We just kind of skim over the surface, but we give them the main things they need to be successful. Because what I discovered over the years is if you want to breed enthusiasm, you just make somebody successful. And it's hard to not be successful with the straw bale garden. So we get somebody hooked on this whole thing of gardening by getting them to try a straw bale garden, and then all of a sudden they're interested in other kinds of gardening as well. So we try not to get too complicated. We give them good illustrations so stuff is easy to follow. But, you know, photographing a straw bale garden is not the easiest thing in the world there, because usually they're so productive that the whole bales are covered with vegetation and you can't see the darn bales. And my publisher doesn't want photos where you can't see the bales. He has to be able to see the bales. So, you know, some of the best gardens, in my opinion, are the ones where, you know, you really can't even see the bale anymore. It's just covered like the fleece on a sheep with vegetables. But they don't like those pictures. They like to be able to see the bales, so... So there you have it.
Yeah, and we'll get some good photos. I think the last time you were on, we got a great photo of somebody's straw bale garden. And you're right, you could hardly see the bales.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Dave in Germantown up next. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Hey, hi, Larry. Hi, Joel. I'm new to the straw bale gardening. I've got my six bales out there. I've actually got two of them sort of tied together because I'm thinking I'm going to put my tomatoes in that double bale. And my question is, I've watered them now for a week, and it sounds like from your previous guest that I've been way over-watering. when do you put on the nitrogen to start the bacteria process? And I did buy some stuff from one of the garden stores called urea.
Oh, yeah, that'll work. That's 46% nitrogen, so yeah. It's got a lot of nitrogen in it. Urea tends to evaporate fairly quickly, so a lot of times the corn farmers will use it, but they put a coating around it. So just make sure you didn't buy the stuff for corn farmers. But if you didn't buy it in an elevator where they sell the farmers, you probably got just regular urea that's not coated.
Yeah.
You want to put it on days 1, 3, and 5, and then days 7, 8, 9 in the process. And use, if you're using urea, just use a half a cup on days 1, 3, 5, and then a quarter of a cup on each bale on days 7, 8, 9. And you'll see some of it will stay on top of the bales, but don't let that bother you at all. It'll, you know, enough of it will get worked down in. And then on the last day, the 10th day, you want to put on one cup on each bale of 10-10-10 or 12-12-12 or 13-13, something that has phosphorus and potassium, the last two numbers. That's what we're looking for. And there's a really good biological reason why we wait until the 10th day before we put this on. You know, phosphorus and potassium tend to bind with soil particles very quickly. So if you put it on real early in the process, there are no soil particles in that bale yet, so it'll wash through. If you wait too long, all of that phosphorus and potassium will bind right at the surface because the whole bale will have become soil particles. So if you put it on day 10, you'll have a nice distribution of soil particles throughout that bale, and as that phosphorus and potassium washes down through the bale, it'll grab onto those soil particles, and you'll have a whole profile inside that bale that will have phosphorus and potassium distributed throughout the profile. So that timing is pretty important. The other ones really aren't that, you know, super important, but the phosphorus and potassium is important.
So the timing is excellent, is everything. My problem is I'm going to be out of town for a week, and so
okay.
I started watering but without any fertilizer, so I can just hold off on watering and start when I get back?
Yeah, put some fertilizer on before you leave. Water it in real good, and then start on about day 4 or 5 when you get home. It'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, just pick up where you left off. You know, you need to get that much nitrogen on to make it work, but exactly what days and how much you put on is, you know, it's kind of hit and miss. But I have to tell you something, so that's what I give you for a recipe.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. All right. We have Rick posted on Facebook that first year of straw bale gardening was a success and great fun. He wants to reuse the bales. And you did a nice job, I think, of explaining about reconditioning or the fact that probably you're not going to be able to recondition those bales. So I wanted to pass that along to him. Carolyn in New Richmond emailed to say that she used bales last year, but she had some disease on her tomatoes. She put them in a new location and sterilized her tools. What can she do to prevent disease this year?
Well, I'll tell you what, tomatoes are very, very sensitive to fungal spores, of course. We had a couple tricks we used with my grandma when I was younger, and as we'd leave the house every day to go to the garden, the first thing we'd do is grab a bar of Ivory soap and scratch the bar of soap and get some soap under our fingernails. Then we'd go and deal with the tomatoes first, and you'd manipulate the vines and pick your tomatoes or do whatever you're going to do with the tomatoes. And then we do the rest of our day of gardening. So if you got your hands dirty when you came in the house at night, you washed that soil off your hands, you got all the dirt out from under your fingernails. Because even that little bit of soil under your fingernails, if you touched your tomatoes with that soil under your fingernails, you can easily transfer those spores to your tomatoes. The other thing I tell gardeners, if you grow tomatoes, you need to throw away your gardening gloves. Or at least never touch your tomatoes with gardening gloves, because gardening gloves have touched the soil. And that soil undoubtedly has spores in it from last year's infected tomato crop. And therefore, those spores are on your garden gloves. You touch your tomato plant with those same gloves, and you just spread the disease yourself. So it's just a few little thought processes that people need to go through to make sure that you're never touching the soil with something and then touching your tomato plant. If you don't do that, if you don't physically transfer it, there's no way that tomato can pick up that disease. There's a little argument out there amongst some university folks that some of these fungal diseases can be airborne, but I'm not a believer in that. I think how they get airborne is from dust. You know, if you let your garden get real dry and you got dry soil around that tomato, now, of course, the wind swirls up that soil, and that's got some spores in it, and that dust lands on the leaves. That could possibly do it. So I like to cover the virgin soil around my bales. Just put down some wood chips or some cardboard or upside-down carpeting or whatever you got. Cover up that soil so that you don't get any of that, you know, dust in your garden that comes up and gets on your tomatoes. Otherwise, that's about all you can do to keep them.
You can't plant them too close together either.
Right. Yeah, get good air circulation. That's important. Keep the foliage dry.
How many tomatoes plants would you put on a bale?
Well, if I'm growing heirlooms, which that's what I grow the most of, they're smaller, you know, determinants. They're only going to give me 15 tomatoes or something, so I can fit two of those on a bale pretty comfortably. But if I put an early girl on there or a beef eater or one of the big hybrids, you know, those things are going to get 8 feet tall and 6 feet wide, and they're going to give me, you know, 80 or 100 tomatoes off of one plant. I can't fit any more vine above the bale than just putting one. So I'll only plant one tomato, but then I'm a pruner, so I like to prune the bottom branches of my tomatoes, keeping lots of air circulation at the bottom. And then I'll put basil in the side of the bale, and I'll plant some carrots on that same bale. I might have a head of cabbage or something. You know, I plant other things on that same bale than just a tomato.
Yeah,
but I don't plant two tomatoes because they just compete for room up on that trellis up above. And I mean, my trellises are 7.5 feet tall. If you look in my book, I talk about building these trellises, and I show people how to do it out of two fence posts with electric fence wire between them. So I got a 7.5 foot tall trellis, and you know, I weave these tomato vines up on that trellis, and they just get huge. But you know, you just don't have room for more than one of them.
Paul in Baraboo, thanks a lot for calling. Hello.
Hey, Paul. Good morning, Larry. I love the show and look forward to it each week. And, Joel, I picked up your book when you were in La Crosse Library, and I've gotten through that. But the one thing I'm having trouble tracking down is how old the bales can be. Because I have access to ones that have been stored in a barn or dry, but they're about 8 years old. Are those going to work?
They absolutely, they'll work. I tell people all the time, if you can still pick it up and move it, then you can still use it. You know, if you go to pick it up and the whole bale just disintegrates and falls apart, well, then it's already decomposed inside. Mother Nature did her work on it. Maybe it was sitting out by the barn for a couple of years or something. But if you, anywhere you go, if you find a bale and you can still pick it up and move it around, it'll work fine. Yep.
That sounds great, because when I was talking to some friends, too, they're getting excited about this. They've had trouble in their garden, traditional gardening, with the neighbor's cat using it as a litter box. And they were pretty excited about being able to put something like this on their patio. But we were wondering, is there any problems with any other animals, like a cat? And is there any plants that could be used as a natural repellent or something, or just keep other animals out?
Well, I know a lot of people. There's a big, huge community garden out in New Jersey called Kearney, New Jersey, and they have, I think they have 360 gardeners in their community garden. It's all straw bales. And they plant a whole bunch of marigolds in the sides of their bales. And she swears to me that those marigolds keep all the, you know, animals and livestock and insects and everything out of the garden, because they, you know, I think they just stink so bad nobody wants to go near them. But marigolds are notorious for that, so I would assume maybe marigolds would work fine. Other than that, you know, I'm not an expert on what would keep cats out of a garden. That's a good question. Probably somebody else would know that answer better than I. But just don't plant anything in there that would attract them, right? Don't plant any catnip in your field, or you'll attract the cat. Another thing that I'll caution you is, if you use fish emulsion, sometimes they get the organic condition their bales with fish emulsion, and that will tend to attract raccoons, because they think there's fish buried inside that bale, so they'll dig a hole in your bale trying to get at the fish, and it's just the fish emulsion. So that's one thing to caution you. And if you use blood meal or feather meal, of course that has animal blood in it,
yeah,
and that will tend to attract coyotes and et cetera, and your dog might lick on it a little bit. It's not going to hurt them, but, you know, it's protein, so that's what tends to attract them.
There
Perfect.
You go.
Those are great answers. I'm even more excited now. So.
All right.
Go get 'em.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks a lot for calling. Joel Karsten, our guest today, talking straw bale gardens with him. He's the author of three books on straw bale gardening, including the latest, Straw Bale Gardens Complete. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at straw bale gardening today with our guest, Joel Karsten. I'm Larry Mueller. His book, Straw Bale Gardens Complete, a bestseller, and he does a wonderful job in that book of explaining the entire process of straw bale gardening. Gene in Duluth has a question for you, Joel, so let's go to Gene. Hi.
Hi, Gene.
Joel, I bought your book a few years ago, and I made a bale garden, but out of hay bales, because someone gave them to me free, and it actually grew quite a bit of stuff. I know I put way too many things close together, because it was my first time, and I was overzealous, but I'm just wondering, what's your opinion about using hay bales?
All the time. Can I use hay bales, especially from people down in Florida and southern United States, because there aren't any oats or wheat down there, so all they have is grass hay. Absolutely. It works just fine. You know, the reason I started using straw bales is because where I live, straw bales are a lot less expensive than hay bales. But certainly hay bales will work just fine. You know, here's the thing about hay. Hay, if it's made from baled grass, which is what a lot of your, you know, lower quality hay bales are made of, is baled up grass. Well, if that grass grew all summer, and then it had mature seed heads when it was harvested and cut, and then that cut grass was made into a bale. Well, if it has mature seed heads and you water and fertilize that bale, guess what's going to happen? All those seeds are going to sprout, and you're going to have a chia pet out in your garden. It's going to grow hair everywhere. But as long as you get double-cut hay, so it's been cut once midsummer and cut again in the fall, none of those seed heads will be mature, and therefore they won't sprout. And you'll have real good quality garden out of those bales. So don't be afraid to use hay. I guess if I have my choice, I'd rather use straw. It tends to hold moisture a little better than the hay does. But, you know, there's advantages to using hay over straw. One of those is it has more nitrogen in it.
Yeah.
So as it breaks down, you tend to have to give, you know, less auxiliary fertilization because that hay will tend to have nitrogen. But, yeah, absolutely, hay works fine. People all over the South use hay, saltgrass hay, alfalfa hay, Timothy grass hay, Bermuda grass hay, you name it. Compressed sugar cane stalks. I have folks using those in the Dominican Republic and Haiti. I have folks in Abu Dhabi and Dubai that use shredded palm tree fronds that go through a shredder. They bale up that shredded palm tree frond, and they garden in that. So you can use this method to garden in any organic material. As it decomposes, it becomes soil.
Hey, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You mentioned other countries, and since your first book came out, you've had speaking engagements around the world, and I hear you have a very exciting trip coming up. What? Yeah. Tell us about it.
Next Thursday, I'm leaving for Cambodia. I'm going to a little town called Siem Reap, Cambodia, and it's a alternative agriculture program sponsored by the Cambodian government and the South Korean government and the United States Department of Agriculture. And they're looking at alternative uses for rice straw. They have lots of rice straw in Cambodia, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
A lot of rice grown there. And rice straw is a little different than some of our straw that we're familiar with. It has a lot more leaf matter instead of stalks. But they have lots of it, tons of it. And the way they get rid of it now, Larry, they light it on fire and they burn it.
Oh.
It's really bad for the environment, and it's kind of a waste of this really great resource. So we're talking to them about, and they did a few experiments last year, but this year we're really going to set up some experiments about using these rice straw bales, and then they don't have access to commercial fertilizers like we do, so we're going to use different livestock manures and poultry manures, but we need to mix it into the bale as we make the bales. So we're going to do some experiments with that and get them started on that. And then the other really neat thing that I think is very curious is we have a whole program we're doing on, if you've ever heard of the ancient Aztec chinampas, these are floating vegetable gardens.
Mm.
You ever heard of such a thing?
No.
Your audience can Google it if they want. Aztec floating gardens, but they're called chinampas. And what we're doing is building a platform out of bamboo so it will float, and then we put bales up on top of this floating platform. Because, you know, there's a lot of areas over there that are wet, really wet during the rainy season, and the floods come and up, you know, the river levels rise, and anything planted on the banks of those rivers gets flooded out. So that soil is essentially, it's really good soil, but you can't plant in it because the floods are going to come and they're going to wipe everything out. But with these chinampas, when the floods come, the chinampas will just rise right up with the floods and lift your straw bale garden right above the floodwater, and then it comes back down. Soil over there is a valuable commodity. You know, they don't have surveyors like we do here where they tell you, you own this plot of soil from here to here to here. Over there, they kind of all fight over the good soil, and good soil means it either supports rice or it gets flooded, and everything, you know, gets flooded for a time, and then the floods go away. So you can't really grow vegetables where you can grow rice, but you can't grow rice where you try to grow vegetables. And everybody fights over this soil, where with these raised beds, we could use this marginal soil, plant in a straw bale that's 2 feet off the ground. Now when the floods come, if they only get 6 or 8 inches of flood water, it won't hurt your vegetables because they're 2 feet up off the ground. So it's a fascinating project we're doing over there. And it gets to the real heart of feeding people that need food. You know, they really need this. And it's not just fun. It's not just a hobby for them. This is part of their, you know, ability
life.
To stay alive.
Yeah. And how long will you be there?
Be there for 10 days.
Yeah.
Helping set up the projects, and there's a couple of NGOs that are participating as well, so non-governmental organizations, and it's just a really fun project. Now I'll keep in touch, and we'll keep, you know, the dialogue open for the next couple of years while they do these studies to see what kind of results they get, but I'm really excited about the opportunities they have. I have other missionaries in different parts of the world. In North Korea, we have some, in Haiti and Dominican Republic, in North Africa. There's lots of people using this basic method, straw bale method, but it may not be on straw. It may be on some other material that's native to their area. You know, you squeeze any organic material into a tight bale, you add some nitrogen to it, and that material is going to turn into soil in a raised bed format that gets nice drainage, holds moisture, and will grow pretty much any vegetable out of it. So the technique's just been adapted to other cultures around the world.
That's very, very cool. Harriet in Muscadet has a question. Hi, Harriet.
there.
Hi, Lily. Thanks for taking my call. I don't know. I just turned on the radio a few minutes ago, so I don't know if this has been addressed yet. But last year I tried straw bale gardening for the first time. And for my fertilizer, I chose Milorganite. And I had a terrible time trying to get the Milorganite down inside the bale. I would come back the next day to water, and the Milorganite would still be on the top. And it would just kind of build, keep building up to the point where I had to take a tool and try to physically push the Milorganite down inside the bale. Have you used Milorganite before?
Yes, I have. I have, actually. We did a big test garden last year. We had all different products we used. And of all the products we used, I'm not paid by Milorganite, but of all the products we use, the bales we use Milorganite on perform the best. Now, here's a trick for you. When you go to put the fertilizer on, take a stick, like a little 2x2 or a piece of pipe or something. I want you to punch a bunch of holes in that bale. And now take your little cup of Milorganite and pour it down those holes. And that gets it introduced deeper into the bale, and then it will act. And as soon as it starts its decomposition process, feeding that, then the Milorganite will work in a little bit better. And you know the other thing is, if you get a little crust that develops on the top of the bale from that Milorganite, don't worry about it. It's not going to hurt anything. When you go to plant, 12 days into the process, you're going to make a hole. Some of that Milorganite will drop down in the hole, and some of it will be touching the, you know, still on the surface of the bale. Every time you water throughout the summer or your dripper irrigation turns on, it's going to drag a little more of that Milorganite down in. But over the course of the summer, it just completely disappears. And those bales, of all the bales we did, commercial fertilizers, everything, those bales did the best. So I don't know what it is about that stuff, but it certainly does
work
for this method. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Harriet. Becky and Rio, your turn. Hi, Becky.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Good. Well, I live on a farm, and my sons bale their straw in big bales. So they're about 3 foot wide, 3 foot high, and 8 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
So I met you at Garden Expo this spring, Joel, and asked you about using the big bales. And the downside you mentioned was getting enough water in them. Well, I decided to go ahead and try it anyway. I've got three of those 8-foot bales lined up. I'm planning to do a strawberry bed on them. And if it works, it'll be awesome. It's waist high. So, but my dilemma is I'm having trouble knowing how much fertilizer to put on. The bales are very dense. The common rule I'm getting from everyone is that one of these big bales is equivalent to 20 small bales.
Well, I don't know if I use 20 times the recommended fertilizer.
Yeah, I just haven't been able to bring myself to put 20 times.
I think I would do about 8 times. That's what I've suggested to people in the past, and it seems to work out well. So just up the recipe by about 8.
That was guess. I use 8. Now, is there any way to judge when it has decomposed enough and when I'm ready to start planting?
Yes, you need a thermometer. You need a compost or a meat thermometer with a long probe on it. And at 6 or 8 inches deep, you want to make sure it's under 105 degrees, and then you're ready to plant. But after you've gone through the conditioning period, I just talked to a woman 2 nights ago. I gave a presentation down in southern Minnesota in Lakefield. And she's doing exactly the same experiment you're doing. And she said her bales have been quite warm for longer than she expected. I think she's about 30 days in, and they still hadn't cooled off enough for her to plant, she didn't think. So it might take longer than a traditional straw bale because of that mass. In the future, one thing you might consider is using, I always tell people, to borrow your neighbor's chainsaw to cut your straw bale in half. Have somebody help you do it. Cut it in half. It's going to gum up your chainsaw. It gets a bunch of gum, you know, gummy straw inside there. And that's why I said borrow your neighbor's chainsaw. cut the bale in half. And this woman did it. The one from Lakefield, she did it, and she said it worked very easy. She said, I cut that bale in half, and now I have two halves, which are conditioning much more quickly and performing very similarly to what a normal straw bale does. So, you know, on the go to the string side, so you're kind of cutting between the strings, you know, as you come across, so you don't lose the compression.
Yep.
But that's a trick you can do for next year, and you might have really good luck.
Yeah.
All righty.
All right.
Well, I'll keep you posted. I'll send you an email with phone.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah.
All righty.
All right. Thanks a lot, Becky, for calling. Appreciate it. And, oh, man. And Gina and Augusta, this came up a little earlier, Gina, but you've got vole issues.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, voles, I tell you, the best thing you can do is get some hardware cloth wire. It's got the little quarter-inch holes in it. You just unroll that spool of hardware cloth wire, and you plop your bales right down the middle of the row. And then bend the edges up a little bit on the sides of the bales, and that'll keep any of those moles and voles from coming up through the bottom. And that's where they like to enter the bales. So, you know, fold the wire up a little bit on the sides. They can't come in from the bottom or from the low sides, and they'll leave your bales alone. You know, they won't eat your potatoes like they probably did last year.
Yeah, they're actually that, and that's pretty inexpensive too. It's the hardware cloth isn't all that expensive. So.
Yeah, and you know, you can use that stuff for 10 years. It never,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't, like, it falls apart or anything. It's good stuff. The other thing that's great about using hardware cloth wire, just as a side note, at the end of the season, if you need to haul all those bales over to your compost bin, you can just grab that wire and it slides across the ground real easy.
So, oh,
like a giant sled to haul your stuff over to your compost pile.
I hadn't thought of that. Well, Gina, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Talking today with Joel Karsten. Joel is the author of 3 books. The latest, Straw Bale Gardens Complete. It's a bestseller. He's a graduate from the University of Minnesota, have a bachelor's degree in horticulture science, and he's been working with straw bales for quite a while now and had some great success. Thanks for having him here on Garden Talk. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. We look at straw bale gardens with Joel Karsten, who is the author of Straw Bale Gardens Complete, a breakthrough vegetable gardening method. And lots of good information. This is the latest edition of the book, and it's always fun to talk with Joel. He's so enthusiastic, and he's really got a good thing going here for you and for me. And Ron in Mauston has a question, so let's just go right there, Ron. Thank you for calling, Ron. What's on your mind?
Hi, Ron.
Thank you. Actually, this is just a generic question that doesn't have anything to do with straw bales. I bought my garden supplies through a major retailer online, and I just received the stuff yesterday, and I want to plant the early stuff today as much as possible. But on the bag of the sweet potatoes, it said when to cut them and wait 2 to 4 days to plant them. I've never read that before. I never heard that before. Is that important? And also, they're talking about planting them 8 to 10 inches apart. My memory was we always planted them like 15 to 18 inches apart in a row.
All right, so seed potatoes. What do you think, Joel?
Yeah, well, you know, I've heard that before about letting them dry after you cut them before you plant them, but we never did that when I grew up.
I didn't do it.
No, we didn't do it either, but I can see where they're after. They're just after allowing it to dry over and callus a little bit on the surface, which would make it less attractive to, you know, say an insect or something or a fungal disease or something when it gets to the soil. But I don't think that's essential to that process. I think he could go ahead and plant them. And, yeah, we always planted ours 2 feet apart, potatoes, hills of potatoes.
Yeah, you know, 8 to 10 inches just seem too close. They'd grow into each other, I would think.
Yeah, I would keep them a couple of, you know, he might be 15 to 18 might be good for, depending on what variety, if you're doing Germans or Reds or something. But if you're doing big russets or something like that, I'd keep them 2 feet apart.
Yeah.
Well, these are actually Yukon Gold, which I think are kind of in between as far as,
yeah,
you know, the size.
Yeah. Well, how do you do it with straw bales? How far apart and so forth do you plant potatoes?
Well, usually I'll suggest if they're big varieties like, you know, Yukons and russets, to just do 2 in a bale.
Okay.
But the smaller varieties, you can get 3, and then we just use a pipe or a 2x2, and we punch a hole in the bale. So you're going to punch almost out the bottom of the bale. So you have about 3-4 inches on the bottom of that hole where there's still straw bale. And then you drop your potato down in there, tuck it down in there with the stick or the piece of pipe, just like you're loading a mortar, and then you just leave it. You don't do anything else with it. And it'll sprout. Of course, it makes a root, and it makes a sprout, and the sprout will follow that tunnel. 14 inches all the way out of the top of your bale. When it gets to the top, it makes a green leaf. Right when it makes a green leaf, you sort of squish the bale around the stem. And remember, potatoes are tubers, so they're going to grow chits along that whole stem all the way to the surface of the bale, and the whole thing fills up with potatoes. So you don't have to do anything else except make a hole, condition the bale, make a hole, plant it, and just let it grow. And it, you don't add any soil or any potting mix or anything. It comes right out the top. And in the fall, you cut the two strings and you kick the bale over, and boop, out comes your potatoes.
There you go. It's a pretty cool process, that's for sure.
Yep.
I haven't given the number for a while, so let me do that right now. If you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share about straw bale gardening, I hope you'll join us. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Joel, I know you've spoken about all the different kinds of materials that could be used. Someone, and I'm not sure that we, I think we mentioned marsh hay, but you've used marsh hay, have you not?
Oh, sure. Marsh hay will work just fine. Yeah, that's just fine. You know, literally any organic material that someone can find, if you can bale it up, make it into a bale, it will work. Now, corn stalks is a common question I get. Can I use baled corn stalks for this? You can use baled corn stalks, but you're going to have to change the timing a little bit because it takes longer for those to decompose. You'd need to probably start decomposing those in the fall so that they'd be ready by spring. And then the disadvantage you get that you don't get is you're not going to get that spike of heat like you do in the straw bale, because we can control that. You know, we can introduce the nitrogen over a short period of time, and that fires up the microbes and it makes it hot. It's much more difficult to control that with corn stalks because there's so much more carbon inside those corn stalks. The other thing that doesn't work very well, it will decompose eventually, but when it does, it just makes a tiny little pile out of that bale, is bean stalks. I get that soybean stalk.
Oh.
Get baled up. And, you know, they're so coarse, they don't squish together very well, and when they do decompose, they have quite a bit of nitrogen in them, but when they do decompose, they really collapse so that, you know, there's almost nothing left of that bale but a little tiny pile of compost, and that's it.
Ada on Facebook wondered if she can plant anything on the sides of her bales.
Sure, yeah, I plant flowers in the sides of mine. I plant all my herbs go in the sides of my bales. Anything, you have to have a bedding plant, so it already has to have a root on it. You can't put a seed in the side of the bale because seeds, because of gravity, they want to grow up. So if you push it in the side, it wants to grow up the top of the bale. But anything that already has, you know, leaves and a root on, you just make a hole. I tell people, use your shovel for this. You're just going to use the handle of your shovel. You're not going to use that shovel for anything else this summer. So just take the handle and shove it in the side of that bale right between the two strings. Make a nice deep hole. And then stick the root way down in the middle of the bale. Don't plant in that crust on the outside edge because it's going to get real dry there and it's not going to get enough moisture. So you want the roots real deep. And then just let the top of that little basil plant or whatever you put in there, just let the top stick out, barely out the edge. And if it can see any sunlight, it'll grow right out the side of that bale. And you'll have a nice, great big basil or, you know, you can even do, I've even planted cabbage, believe it or not, in the side of my bales, Larry.
You have.
Yeah, they flop sideways, and people say, how come that cabbage is sideways like that? And actually, it happened by accident one time. I planted in the edge, and the bale tipped over, and I didn't get it tipped up right, and it just kept growing just fine. So I started planting them in the side. And those big, huge leaves, those scoop leaves on the bottom of the cabbage, usually they hold a whole bunch of water, and you kind of get all that gunk around the bottom.
Yeah.
All that stuff drains out. It keeps the leaves nice and clean. You know, they grow exactly the same sideways as they do standing upright. So, amazingly enough.
Very cool. Kim and Madison, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi. Listen, I'm glad to have a chance to speak with you. Mr. Carson, I was wondering, I wanted to save money, and of course I didn't go to our nursery down the street for the bales this year because they were so expensive. So what I did was ordered them, but they're not going to be delivered till mid-May. Is that way too late to start conditioning and then plant about around the 30th?
Oh, you'll still have crops. You know, you just won't be able to grow the super long season stuff. You're never going to get watermelons at this point.
Okay.
You know, there's some crops you wouldn't be able to grow. Even tomatoes might be more difficult if you start that late.
Oh.
But you'll still have, you know, you could have great leafy green crops and peas and beans. There'll be plenty of time. And,
okay.
And peppers and stuff like that. I think you'll be okay. Even some squash grows pretty quickly. So you'll...
You could probably get, cherry tomatoes wouldn't be a problem at all.
Yeah, cherry, a lot of those are 95-day, 90-day. You should get a crop with those, too. But
good, good. Well, I was just wondering, too, if we're doing some organic gardening in my yard with the bale, so
uh-huh.
Would that matter? Does it
take
over to condition with organic fertilizer?
Oh, sure. No, I have people that do that all the
time.
Not
Milorganite.
Milorganite is organic, or... blood meal or feather meal are both really good options. You can really you can use any organic as long as the concentration of nitrogen is at least 5%.
Okay.
You know, so but one of the drawbacks is it's expensive. These organic sources are expensive because the volume of nitrogen is lower. You know, the concentration is lower. You need to use a larger volume to make it work. And usually those organics are... by weight are much more expensive because, you know, they're just harder to get nitrogen from organic sources. So, but there are lots of options. I have people that are vegans and they don't want to use any animal proteins at all in their fertilizer. So then a good option for them is to use alfalfa meal, which typically has just over 5% by concentration. I'll tell you what will not work, however. What will not work are coffee grounds.
Oh.
You know, it has some nitrogen, but not nearly enough. And you can't get enough volume worked into the bale to make it work. And coffee grounds, when you add a whole bunch of them, they change the acidity as well because they tend to be very acid. The other thing that doesn't work very well is compost tea. Now, compost tea, while it does have some nitrogen, doesn't have nearly enough to feed and satisfy these bacteria. And I tell people all the time, they complain because it takes so much material. And I say, you know, I didn't write these rules. Mother Nature did. You know, it takes a certain volume of nitrogen in order to feed those bacteria in order to break down all that carbon. You got this whole bale filled with carbon. It needs lots and lots of microbes to do that job. And in order to grow that many microbes, you got to have lots of nitrogen. So it's just how it works, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There are lots of options you can choose from if you want to do it organically. I talk to people every day, and organic gardens turn out even better, just as successful or even better than using, you know, the refined fertilizer from the store. So.
There we go, Kim. Thank you very much for calling. Let's give Jesse and Stoughton a chance to join in. Jesse, hi.
Hi, Jesse.
Jesse, are you there?
Oh. She went to make a sandwich, I think.
We must have lost you. Well, let's go to Mary in Spring Green. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I just wanted to make a comment about your potatoes. You were talking about cutting them and then letting them dry.
Mm-hmm.
We've planted potatoes for many, many years in the garden, and we tried that a few times without drying them. And it was a white potato in particular. They just rotted in the ground. The seed would rot. It wouldn't come up. There's too much moisture on them. They would rot.
Well, I don't know. I remember for, I don't know how many years since I was a knee-high to a grasshopper, my grandma would be cutting the potatoes, and right out of her hand when she'd cut them, she'd drop them in the ground.
Maybe it depends on what kind of soil you have or something, but
yeah.
We had a rather sandy soil that we were planting those on, and they just did not come up.
That's an interesting observation, and I have heard that. I just had never experienced it myself. So, yeah, it may very well be true. You might be better off to let them dry for a couple of days, maybe.
Kath, thanks a lot for calling, Mary. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Open lines at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Kathy from Minocqua emailed to ask if she can alternate between using lawn nitrogen fertilizer and Milorganite, so kind of like every other time or something.
Sure, if she wanted to. Yeah, that's fine. That won't hurt anything.
Yeah,
it's all the same to the microbes. You know, all they care about is that it's nitrogen.
you were in Orlando for the Epcot Flower and Garden Show last weekend. I've been to Epcot for the Flower and Garden Show. It's really quite an event. What was the experience like for you?
Well, this is actually my third time I've been there, so I'm getting to be an old pro at it now. But It's really fun. I mean,
isn't
it? The Disney operation treats you really well. I mean, they it's a first class deal for sure. But I spoke 3 days in a row, twice each day. And Larry, I called ahead of time and I said, now this year, make sure you guys have plenty of books, because I said the crowd goes nuts when they can't buy a book afterwards. You know, they want me to sign it and they want to be able to buy a book. And usually the gift shop is run out of books every year. Sure enough, I get down there. They only ordered 100 books. They were sold out after the very first talk I gave, and they had no more books for the rest of the time I was there.
Oh, so,
yeah, you know, which is unfortunate because people are they want to go home with something and get started right away. So then, you know, I tell them to go to my website and buy the book there. So,
well, that's kind of foolish on their part.
I know, but Disney, I guess they don't care about getting every last dollar out of their people who, who they could, but it's really a fun thing. You know, I get people from all over the world that come to Disney.
Yeah.
And so I'm talking to people from other countries and from all parts of the United States. And, you know, the questions are soup to nuts. Sometimes they talk about vegetable plants that, you know, I don't have a lot of experience with because, you know, we don't grow a lot of some stuff that they grow down in Florida and Texas and stuff. We don't grow a lot of that up here in Minnesota. So I don't have a lot of experience in that, but it's just fun talking to these people from all different walks of life and all different parts of the world, and it's a great experience.
Yeah, and the Flower and Garden Show itself is just, it really is quite a nice sight to see.
Yeah, they do a great job, I'll tell you. It's just beautifully done at Epcot there. They, you know, all the flowers they bring in and all the, you know, they have great talks all throughout the day for, I think it runs for, what, 8 weeks or something like that, that the flower show runs. So it's really a spectacular event. They do a great job. It's Debbie Mola-Mickler that arranges everything or organizes everything. She's been there for 27 years at Disney. So this really is her baby, this whole program. And she actually grew out some straw bales for me. She had vegetables coming out of these straw bales, and they just put the bales up on a pallet, and they brought them right in the stage area where I gave my talks, and they had burlap around the base of them and stuff to kind of disguise the palette. She just did, there's kale and tomatoes and all kinds of stuff coming out of the bale. She did a great job, really.
Oh, man. Tim and Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Tim.
How do you do? Got a real simple question. Which way does the bale sit? The strings up or the string sideways? You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Well, I tell you what, I like to put mine so the bales run around the bales. The strings run around the bales.
There's a couple reasons
for that.
Yeah.
For one reason is because when we make those little tents over the top with the plastic and we run it over the top of the bales, it's called the straw bale greenhouse. I like somewhere to tuck that plastic on the side of the bale when it hangs down, and I can slide it under that string that way. Another reason is when I'm planting, I got a sharp trowel in my hand, and I poke in that top of that bale. I don't want to cut the strings. If you cut a string, you release the compression on the bale, and if it's not being squeezed, it won't decompose as quickly. You'll discover that. So then you need to tie a new string around there. It's really hard to tie a new string if that string's underneath the bale. Very difficult.
Okay, so, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling.
It works well that way. But I also tell people it's not a deal breaker. You know, lots of people will put them flat, and they want a larger surface on the top to plant on and then two small surfaces on the side. It's not quite as high up off the ground. If you want to do it that way, that's fine. Just be careful you don't cut the strings. And you're still going to end up with a great garden, even if you don't, you know, tip them up on edge like I do.
Jen in Watertown. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Okay, I'm a first-time straw baler, and I was just thinking today of going out and starting mine. So I went and got some fertilizer, and I got 10-10-10. Is that okay to start with, or should I get something with more nitrogen?
Well, you're going to use that 10-10-10 on the last day, and if worse came to worse, you could use it. You just need to use a little more of it because it doesn't have quite 20% nitrogen, which is what we're looking for. But what I would do if I were you is I'd go back to if you get by the hardware store and just get whatever their store brand is, just get the lawn fertilizer, whatever the store brand is. The cheapest stuff they sell, that's usually what you want, the cheapest lawn fertilizer. But make sure, too, that doesn't have any herbicide in it.
Right, and I'm following
anything.
Day by day.
Yeah, you don't want anything, one of those, you know, that's got crabgrass preventer or, you know, weed and feed or anything. But just the cheapest stuff. You know, it'll be called Green Up or, you know, whatever. that's what I tell people. The least expensive lawn fertilizer you can buy is probably going to work the best for this method because it's real soluble. And you buy these real expensive name brand fertilizers, and they tend to say all over on them, oh, this feeds for the whole summer. You know, it's a slow release fertilizer. We don't want that. We want the quick release stuff.
Okay, then that's a half a cup per bale.
Yep, half a cup on each bale on days 1, 3, and 5, and then on days 7, 8, 9, use a quarter of a cup, so half that amount.
Okay, and if I use just the water that's coming out of the hose for the first day, at least.
Oh, yeah, it'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. You can use it throughout the whole period. It just, you know, if you're using really cold water, just make sure you don't water too much. That's important because that cold water is going to cool off those microbes. And you know, if you just have a bucket, just run it into a bucket, and then tomorrow you can dip a gallon out of that bucket and pour it on top of the bale.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Yes. Marit in Madison, it's your turn. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry.
Hi,
I just love your show, and I'm just so thankful to be able to listen to you talk about gardening every Friday.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask, he just mentioned about coffee grounds and how they do have some nitrogen but are very acidic. Wondering if coffee grounds are okay to just sprinkle around blueberry plants who want some acid in their soil.
Sure. That'd work great for blueberries. You know, they got
Yeah.
They like that acid soil. So, you know, a lot of times people will recommend using any kind of fertilizers that have lots of acidity to them. So certainly that will work.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck. Thank you. Don and Marshall, hello.
Yes, got a question about sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
Do you need to put a plant in there, or can you use the cut potato like regular potatoes?
Well, sweet potatoes, you need to make what they're called slips. And I'll tell you, a really great place you can go to learn how to do this is if you go on YouTube and just go on YouTube and say sweet potato, starting sweet potato slips. There's a really good video on there. It's got like 5 million views because it's really well done. But how you do it essentially is you take a sweet potato and half of it goes in water and half of it is out of the water. So if you kind of put a couple toothpicks in it and set it in a dish of water, so the bottom half is in water and the top half isn't. And then it'll sprout roots down and you'll get the tops will sprout, so you'll get a stem and a root. And wherever that stem and root come out of one of the eyes of the potatoes, and you kind of take your knife and you carve that part of the potato off. That's called a sweet potato slip. And out of one sweet potato, I think I can get 25 slips out of one. So you can grow a whole bunch of them out of one sweet potato. But when you go to the market, sometimes the sweet potatoes you buy will be supposedly, I don't know this for a fact, but supposedly they're treated so that they don't sprout.
Yeah,
and if that happens, if you put a sweet potato in and you go a week and you haven't seen any sprouts, then you got the wrong sweet potato. So you're going to need to buy one that doesn't have that coating on it. But I caution people, you know, you can buy sweet potato slips already started at the garden center, but they don't seem to work as well as the ones you start yourself.
So yeah.
Just buy a couple sweet potatoes and start a few of your own slips and pop those in the bales. Sweet potatoes love the straw bale gardens. They love them. Out of each mound of my sweet potatoes, I'll get 15 or 20 potatoes out of each one.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they do really well.
Joel, it's always such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. Good luck on your trip to Cambodia, and we'll talk when you get back.
All right, sounds great. Thank you so much, Larry. I really appreciate it, as always.
Joel Karsten is the author of Straw Bale Gardens Complete. A guy that's really enthusiastic, and with good reason, because straw bale gardening works pretty well. I've had good success myself, and so I'm happy to have him on. On Monday, we'll talk at 11:45 with our weather guy, so I hope you can join in for that. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store.